Like, I'm so used to a lot of these international acts coming to Singapore and doing the same tired, hacky jokes of, oh, you guys can't chew gum, you've got graffiti, or the usual, I went to Japan, man, that toilet shoot water up my ass, now I'm gay. And I'm like, for f***ing sake, do some actual f***.
Welcome to Comedy with an Accent podcast. I'm your Taiwanese comedian, Quan Wen. I interview comedians who perform English stand-up comedy but who are not native English speakers or they can have a very distinct British regional accent. This podcast is all about comedy, about accent, about languages, and about the comedy technique. So stay tuned if you're interested. Hello, welcome back to another episode of Comedy with an Accent podcast. This is going to be weird. We have our first returning guest. So this is the episode I'm literally not going to ask you, do you think you have an accent? Because we did it last time. Let's welcome back again our returning guest, Sam
Singh. Hey. Guess who's run out of guests to invite on this podcast?
No, we are not.
Not enough immigrants in this country, I'm afraid.
Well, there are, but not everyone agrees to be on. Some people I could invite, but I wouldn't bother because I feel they are not quite honest enough with themselves. So asking them to come over, they would just be reading their PR script without actually opening up with sharing useful information.
Sorry, you're not invited on. Which one do you think I'm talking about?
It's in LA. We don't. Okay. Sam from Singapore. Since last recording. Actually, Sam, that episode was the joint top 8 of all my episodes.
Who is your most popular guest?
I have 45 episode top 8. Do you think that's a good record?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good. And also, since your episode, I mean, before you, it was Jingha, but it took your episode to have some good listening numbers from Singapore. You are indeed the Singaporean comedy circus mother hen.
Yeah. Is it an interesting thing? Because now that I've moved here, because I've known Jingha for a while, and I've always like loved him and supported his work. And now it's like, he's like, yeah, I get to hang and work with Jingha. And I've also realized, we're going to have to compete for gigs now. Because it's going to be, we've got to choose one Asian Singaporean. And I'm like,
imagine
damn you, he's got BBC
I
finalist.
Haven't welcomed you with open arms. So what I was saying, yes, you're asking who the most popular episode was.
Who's champion?
It's Denis Chujoye. It's a Russian comedian who is currently based in Berlin.
Okay.
Because he got like really massive following. Not to suggest you don't, but he shared it.
I don't. I'm not as big as a Russian in Berlin.
So basically, that's the top episode. But you were in the joint top 8.
Yeah. Take that, Jingha.
No, Jingha was just below you. Like just a couple single digit numbers.
The only time I'm going to beat him in anything comedy related.
So Sam was featured in episode 25 of season 1. We packed a bunch. But I listened back to the episode. I think I asked you more about Singapore. I was curious about the language policy, the cultural heritage. Asking a question like, exactly what is your mother tongue? And why do you say this is your mother tongue when it was not your most fluent language? So we talk about all that. And today, there's a Mandarin expression, we don't fry the cold rice again. So I'm going to ask you some different question. I'm going to explain why there's a need to invite Sam Seban. Should I explain why I think there's a lot to talk about?
Yes, please.
Because you've been supporting Ed Byrne on tour.
Yes, who has been a lovely boy.
First, I wanted to say, last recording, you were a Singaporean act who come to London every now and then.
Yeah.
You were like the French president, you know, who leave the presidential palace to cheat. UK was your mistress.
Yeah, my favorite mistress in the world.
But now you are a London-based act from Singapore.
I have divorced my old haggard ex-wife.
Yes.
I am now based here. I have officially moved. I have a visa. Take that, racist. I am now here legally. Take that, racist.
What visa was that? I'm curious.
I'm on the Global Talent Visa. It is the visa that all of the international acts want to get, but most of them don't have a career.
I do want to ask you whether my Global Talent was meant ironically.
No, I joke about it in the show when people are like, oh, global talent, that means it's a tab and globally. It's like, no, it's a scheme to steal the talent from the globe to the UK.
How much did you have to pay for that?
£1,000 every year for NHS upfront, so £4,000 upfront.
In one go?
In one go, yeah.
Well, actually, I think it's better to pay upfront because they're more likely to increase the price. I'm not joking.
Oh, yeah,
you are
right. Because I kind of missed the application date for last year. And the price went up from like $650 to $1,000 per year. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, that's
wild. By how many days different?
By like a week or so.
See, Sam has to give you a life lesson. Never procrastinate.
Yeah, never procrastinate. It's like, never underestimate the ability of the British government to just go, we're going to charge more.
Wow, yeah. £4,000 in one go. That's a very big amount of money.
That's a huge amount of money.
One of the key things I want to ask you is, because on this tour, you've been to places, okay? I'm going to say
locations.
You've been to places that I don't even know they exist. I mean, a majority of them, I do know. Some of them I've also geeked in. But I will be very curious for you as obviously an outsider to entertain the crowd. Also, because Ed is such an established comedian with TV profile. And without even looking at your clip, I can kind of map out the profile in his audience. And so I just... there is some breaching and some work for you to get there.
Now, I'm going to say this. I say this with love.
Yeah.
Ed, I love you. You're the sweetest boy in the world. But you got to get some younger audiences, man. Lord almighty, your comedy is good. Get some kids in.
Yeah, otherwise after a very cold winter, your box office will literally just halve next to it. But
yeah, before... we're not even kidding. Last year when we did the show during the summer in September, a guy full on passed out, like had like passed out before due to the heat wave. And Ed just went, oh, like just saw a commotion. He was like, oh, I'm very popular tonight. And they had to go like, no, Ed, someone nearly died in your show. It's the first time I performed for a comedy where I'm like, man, some of you aren't going to make it to the end. Just not gonna.
You're so mean. Something's never changed.
I mean, it's the first time I've been heckled by death. It's like normally I die. They don't die. I do.
Ah.
This is the first
time. But that's the different section. And there is another one I want to talk about. We briefly talk about you touring in continental Europe. I did some of those shows myself this year.
Yeah, you were on tour.
Yeah, well, tour is a fancy word in quotation marks, but I tried to do that just to experience, so I feel it can be a more constructive or a richer discussion because we can both put in our perspective. But first, why did you leave Singapore? Why did you want to move to the UK?
I cover it all in the New Hour show, and of course, go and watch it. It's really good. But the genuine reason is... there's just a ceiling. I've hit the ceiling in Singapore. I've gone as far as I can. I could not go any further with who I was as a comic because I was getting offers, but they were all like, hey, can you tone down the gay stuff? Could you be more local?
Okay, there is a subtle difference in what I perceive your answer was and now what your explanation sounds like to me. Because when I thought you either were the kind of comedy nerds who think that I need to get to the next level in terms of my comedy quality or... you are thinking your stage is not big enough. You want even bigger global stage. But what you just say sound like the cultural restriction make you feel like there's some jokes you like to do you couldn't do. There's a difference in that when you say you hit the ceiling.
Now, it's like I just couldn't work with the audience anymore. I had to adapt my material for them, which is always weird because every time I come here or go around the world, I get to do the material that I actually want to do.
Been cheating all these years and you finally made up your mind. You feel like the outside is better.
Oh, so wider.
I'm sorry for the disrespectful language. So
I didn't expect of all people to use on a podcast, you.
Because
with this background.
I'm going to beep it out so it doesn't really matter whether it's something else I said, right?
Yeah.
So you said that you left Asia because you felt in Asia to accommodate the Asian audience taste, you always feel a little bit like your hands are tight.
Yeah, and it's not even the Asian audiences. It was specifically Singapore audiences. Right. It was like anytime I joked about things that were not based in Singapore or not about Singapore, the audiences just didn't care.
And year on year, you have all the fun time in the UK you can compare to.
Yeah, and it was like there was more to write about. There's more interesting things to talk about. There's more topics. I could do a joke about HPV and the audience knew what the hell HPV was. I still have to explain HPV.
The Singaporeans don't know it.
They have no clue. They're dumb
because they eradicate it, or
no, because they don't have sex, so they have no idea what it is.
God. But has America ever been an option? Australia,
so
Canada?
America was the option pre-pandemic, and then post-pandemic, I was like, ooh. The options were like America, the UK, and Australia. Australia was like a consideration, but then I realized if you make it big in Australia, it's going to come to the UK.
So why do a detour just go straight?
I'm straight up. This is a breaking gossip news. Jenny Tien from Taskmaster Australia is moving to the UK.
Really?
And I'm like, see, even she's jumping ship.
Yeah.
Because even she's on Taskmaster and even she knows...
Well, it's a country famous for kangaroos. Of course, they're jumping. Okay, that's really stupid. And
That is the most family-friendly joke I've ever heard you tell. Because they're kangaroos.
Kangaroos. So we know why you decided to move And how did it feel when you actually moved? In one of your clips, you share that, God, this is more difficult and it's actually so expensive. And this is the first time you don't live with your parents.
Yeah, so good.
Yeah, there's something culturally very Asian. Like, yeah. There's a film with Sarah Jessica Parker and Matthew McConaughey. Mm-hmm. Matthew McConaughey is a guy who doesn't want to move out, happy to stay as a bachelor and still live with parents. And Sarah Jessica Parker was hired to lure him to start his independent life and with
what
a woman as a
movie?
Couple. And my mom was watching that film and she asked me, puzzled, why do the parents want their children to leave? I was like, do you not know there's a reason I left you? But for my mom, having a 30-year-old son still want to live with his parents is an amazing thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's the best gift an Asian parent can ever get, yeah. Right?
The second I got the freedom, I was like, bah, bitches, I peaced out earlier. Like, I've never been a big subscriber of, like, live with your parents. I'm very much an individual.
Were you still with your boyfriend at that time?
You still am right now.
You're still with him?
Yeah. He's coming down to Edinburgh for the whole run. I've paid for his flights and his accommodations. Because I'm stupid.
Is he going to move with you eventually?
Yeah, the plan is eventually we're going to move him over here. It's just
British people, you let one in and they start to bring in.
Okay, we're all coming. Okay. Me and my 50 Asian boyfriends.
You kind of talk about it was harder than you thought it would be to move to another country. It's not exactly a brand new country. I always come here. I always know this country, but it is different.
Oh, no, it's difficult.
Yeah, when it comes to relocation.
I'm somebody who has always lived with his parents. So to not just move out and live alone, but to move to a totally different country. And then most of my stuff right now is in boxes.
Still like, in boxes?
No. As in most of my stuff from Singapore is in 4 boxes on a ship somewhere in the ocean, slowly being shipped over here.
Oh.
Yeah. And it took multiple travels to sort of bring everything over. If you're just, you know, going from, let's say, like one part of London to another, that's already difficult. I have to get these flights, and these are not cheap flights from Singapore to here. They're expensive. And just to bring like clothes. It's not even like, oh, here's some board games or books. It's like, this is clothes. I need this to travel with. I'm not easy to shop for in my size. So I need
these
clothes.
That's true. You need to go to the children's department.
You say that as a joke. I do have to go to the
children's. I'm not saying that as a joke. I say it as a factual statement.
Yeah. I've never been able to buy a jacket or suit off the rack in a proper shop except for H&M kids department. There was a jacket that fit me precisely, but I could not get it because there was a giant embroidered cartoon penguin on the side.
So what about comedy then? And how's comedy been treating you since you moved over?
So much better. I mean, I was lucky enough to get on the tour of Ed. Besides being a huge financial help, it gave me a chance to just see a lot of the UK and understand how it worked. And also to work with someone at that level meant that if I had a question about comedy, about like how to adapt it for audiences, I had basically the encyclopedia to go to.
Have you jumped straight into the tour or did you do quite a few gigs before you start to open for Ed?
No, so I started to open for Ed last year in September post Edinburgh. So I did some of the shows there and then I'm now back to do the longer version of the tour. I just picked up where I left off.
Right.
I mean, all the club gigs I already had done.
But has it been ever like anything different when you do a club gig now as a London-based act and used to be a visiting act?
I now know more local references, so I can easily do a bit more gags and jokes. But honestly, it's just no different from when it's just fun.
Right, let's come to the tour. This is the most random thing, how Sam became the opening act for Ed.
Yeah.
Sam was running a show called the Asian Comedy Showcase, and Ed Byrne was the token white guy.
Yeah. So my favorite thing is that... So the whole story of me and Ed was that I met him in 2017 in Malaysia. So he was doing...
So you had known each other already.
Yeah, so we met for like a few minutes because he was doing a documentary with Dara. I was an interview guest. And then
see how you name drop, like Dara, not Dara O'Brien, just like Dara, surely you
I didn't say it could have been another Dara, it could be Dara Jones.
Who's Dara Jones?
No one. And also most of the other acts were mostly doing local jokes, so they couldn't quite understand, and my stuff was more international. I was the few actors like, oh, okay, we can get the references. And then just like, you know, had that high bye, never talked again. And then 2019, I was at the Fringe. I met up with them at the bars, and we just drank every other night. It was a good time. And then 2022, I met Bumintu in Melbourne. I was like, hey, let's go drink at a bar. I'll get you a pint. And as I buy him the pint, he looks at his phone, and he goes like, oh, my opening act just dropped out for the tour. Do you want in? And that's all I got to open for him.
Who's that act that canceled?
I have...
Because that single act...
Right? Yeah, I gotta get...
This is like why theater, sometimes people are also afraid, because you may cancel one gig and your understudy shines and you never get it.
No, I think... I don't want like to name them, but I think they asked them on the tour as well. I think they just couldn't do those dates.
Yeah.
I think she just was busy. She's still on the road with Ed. We are on a group chat together.
Oh, so I just thought, how did you bond with him so quickly at a bar when you had met a couple of times before?
Yeah, and like 2019, we were just drinking buddies. Cut to this year, I got back on the road with him. And I've been also bringing board games on the road with me. So now he's just buying more board games for the house and family.
There's also another element of probably he likes touring with you because you have shared interests and hobbies.
We're nerds.
Right?
We're geeks. And also, I can drink and I can stay up late and drink with him. Because not a lot of the newer acts don't do that. For better, that is a good thing. The fact that newer acts aren't like, let's get drunk and let's stay up.
And at the same time, he's a nice guy. He doesn't want to feel like I'm pressurizing you to do this.
Yeah.
So if you go on Sam's Instagram, you see they do the pre-show pint. I'm not a beer drinker. I like the idea, but it doesn't speak to me that much. But I'm pretty sure for someone who enjoys beer, I'm sure people follow your Instagram or S Instagram just to see what you've off to and what beer's been drinking this
time.
Yeah,
and it's a fun thing for me because I get to not just see the UK, I get to drink the UK. The UK has a lot of good beer, a lot of good local craft beer that rarely gets to shine because a lot of these bars
the football cannot come home, they better have good beer, so... Ouch, okay. I'm going to get to the essence, the focus of recording today. Mm-hmm. How many towns have you toured or are you touring with at this time?
I don't have a full count. I know I have 17 dates, so it's technically
17.
I'm trying my best within the 4 years I have here. I want to play in every county in England.
Sorry, I wrote my eyes rolled.
What?
Because it's one of those like comedy nerds plan is I'm going to conquer all the town and then put a map and every time they went somewhere
and
then
put a pin it on it.
I'm sorry, so I rolled my eyes to that right now.
No, I already hit 23 of the 40, I think 48, not historical, but like...
You know what may happen? Like after you've done all of them and they have a boundary change and suddenly there's a little sea gaps in the middle.
Yeah, no, I love that. Then I can go to more places.
So you were covering, I think you went to Southwest England, West England and Northwest England as well.
Yeah.
Southeast. 17 days. The places I've never heard before is Louth. I literally do not know Louth.
Yeah, Louth is in East England. It is in Lincolnshire and it is very white. It was so old. Like, Ed's audiences looked like babies compared to the audiences I met in Louth. So that wasn't for the tour. That was for myself for the hour preview.
You were doing a preview in Louth. How did you find that random place?
So Robin Perkins books it. And I got booked on to do just a showcase. But because one act dropped out, there wasn't enough time to fill. So she just went, do you want to do a preview? And I was like, yeah. Not realizing it's going to be a bunch of very old, white, anti-immigrant people.
Yeah, you say in the clip that they are all old, white people who hate immigrants, but I managed to win them over.
Genuinely, when the set started, I could tell they were a little bit like, oh, we're not sure. And I had to ask like, hey, you know, this is going to be a show about immigration and moving here. What do we feel about immigrants? And they were audible for multiple people.
But at least they were like mumbling. They were not like, go back, right? It's not the worst.
Yeah, they were polite racists. But I think by the end, they were like, okay, because they've never heard a point of view from an immigrant before.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact they had to sit down and listen, by the end, they were like, okay, they're not that bad, which I like the fact.
There is a difference in sit down to enjoy an immigrant does comedy than actually voting for a political party that welcomes more immigrants in. Yeah. Right? There's
a
difference in that.
You gotta start somewhere. You gotta start somewhere. I'm not expecting them to vote.
Are you trying to portray yourself as a catalyst for change in racist part of
what things? What I can say is, hey, Kia, I'm available in the next 5 years. Book a motherfucker, won't you?
Did you remember the turning point, the specific line or section you start to feel they are easing into your universe?
There is a part of the show where I joke about how a Singaporean friend brought me to a pub and he didn't realize it was a bit of a racist pub because the Google Maps had like a picture of like the St. George's Cross on it and then he didn't realize that, oh, that's not a good sign to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole thing is about me saying, when you move, you should really like learn to integrate and learn to be part of society. And that's when they went, oh, he's one of the good ones. He knows.
Oh.
Because I straight up just say like, hey, if you move to a country, you have to integrate and learn about the culture.
Mm. Did you do exactly all the job in the same way? Or because sometimes you kind of make fun of the local population. But I wouldn't think you're the most confrontational one. So some people actively say, for example, English people, you are ugly. where I come from, people are better looking. You know that.
Who does that?
People do that.
Who does that kind of thing? I'm not saying like, oh, I would never do such crude or cruel comedy. I'm a cunt.
No. Yeah. I think it's a very risque thing to do, but some can pull it off.
Yeah.
Even the right kind of atmosphere, stage persona.
Yeah.
And if you say that line in a specific tone, it can work. But
oh, yeah.
It's likely to bomb. It's more risky for sure.
Yeah, it's
But that's not your comedy style. Right?
No, my comedy style is never... Like, I'm the kind of person, like, I'm posting like a series on my Instagram where all the towns I've been to with Ed, I actually do my research about the town and I write jokes about their history.
Yes, it is very evident when you see the clips from Sam. He would do the road update and it will always cover the really little map indication where the town is. He will explain what the town's population size is. You can see that you do the research and you will mention some facts, fun facts.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me what's the most memorable or the hilarious one you remember or the research you've done?
My favorite one is Coventry, which I just put the clip up. On their website, they say, like, we are the town that built the first tank and the first traffic indicators and first motorized funeral. And then I researched, it was all lies.
But how did you know they are lies?
Because I was like, there's no way you would have built the first tank because you did not have the infrastructure as a city. So I checked and I was like, no, it was Louth, Lincolnshire that had the first tank.
But why did they want to lie about that? Or is it because it's a controversy? It's contested?
No, I think it's like a thing where it is... So this is a true fact around the world. Every country has a stake to claim they invented the USB because there were various different versions of the USB.
You mean the USB stick?
Yeah, the USB stick, the technology for it. Various countries helped in the development of it. There were also multiple stages of the USB. So there is no one country that has a universal, we invented it, this is our thing. Every country has had a part. So I think Coventry tried to do, we built the first tank, and they probably just like, helped build like one wheel.
Or maybe they built the seating inside the
tank.
Yeah,
but they said they rebuilt the tank. And I'm like, no, it's not true. And this is on the city council website. So this is like,
I think need to give Coventry some slack because they were bombed like shit by Germans during the Second
World War. A lot of the UK was bombed like shit by Germans. I'm from Singapore.
To
I went
to fair, just to be on the safe side, a lot of German places were also bombed like shit by the Allies. So all right, let's get over this uncomfortable bit. Particular fun fact that fall flat. Has there any fact that you quoted after your laborious research that locals were not even aware of?
No, most of the time they're not aware of any of these facts.
Really?
Because most of the time they're used to people going, oh, here's the local joke about this, or oh, we've got these kind of, like, people know, like, these are the basic jokes. I'm like, let's deep dive. Let's find the history that y'all probably don't know about, because I think that's more fun. This is the most delightful thing about writing these jokes. They can work anywhere. I don't have to do it in that town. I can go to another town and go like, hey, this is a fun fact about this place. I can even do a show, which I plan to do somewhere down the line once I've written enough.
No, I think what you're saying is the skills you pick up by doing this is transferable. Some jokes will still be specific to a place though. The lazy way to do this is to describe a place that's really run down, really shit. And you just change the name of that place every time you go. But that's a lazy approach.
Yeah.
What you did is you tailor individually, and even though, let's say, a punchline doesn't land for someone, they will still enjoy listening to the facts they don't know about their hometown.
Yeah, because sometimes I'm just writing this on the day, so some of the jokes don't always land, but it's still like a fun, like, oh, that was a delightful thing. And it's like stuff where people may know or may have heard of, but they're not quite sure. So it's like a, oh, I remember Hetty Weintraub's Investigates, which was like a working class Miss Marple show in one of the towns.
After the show, if the audience come out, is it something they mention?
Yeah, they do like say, hey, thank you doing the research. They either, hey, not a lot of people talk about this, or I didn't know about this, that was nice.
Yeah,
it's a little bit of local pride because all these towns and cities have done amazing things,
and I'm sure they probably have acts that come over and a whole section of Joe talking about a specific borough in London, and they sit there like, what does it concern us? What do we have to know what's happening? And how could you just name drop this part of London assuming the rest of country need to know Croydon?
And also for me, it's like I'm so used to a lot of these international acts coming to Singapore and doing the same tired hacky jokes of, oh, you guys can't chew gum, you've got graffiti, or the usual, I went to Japan, man, that toilet shoot water up my ass, now I'm gay. And I'm like, for f***ing sake, do some actual research about the
You know, like, sometimes when I walk into a comedy room and if their decor has something that stands out, as an instinct of a comic, you want to comment on it.
Yeah.
But if the show has a regular returning audience, mm-hmm. I wonder how many other comments have already remarked on it.
What I do is I always ask the MC, has this been done before? Has it been done a lot? And if they go, yeah, then I will fully like...
So for example, if you go to a room with golden tinsel and it was during Donald Trump's time, you are very likely to remind people of the golden shower. And I think this is what I wanted to say though. I think Sam, I don't know whether it's just his Asian heritage or his personal thing, but you're a very professional comedian. No, like you take into account the audience feeling.
Yeah.
You're going to all the small towns and I think you show your utmost goodwill. I know I'd come across someone who looked very alien to people you normally see, especially on stage. But I'm going to show you I'm here to entertain you and I'm going to show you I can do that.
Yeah, I mean, most of these shows, it is 90 to 100% white. Like, I am the only person of color they're going to see on stage for a while. Like, these people are not running out for a Nish Kumar or a Phil Wang. They straight up aren't, so... And
I keep this bit?
I'm happy you should keep this bit.
You know, there are acts, even though they are minority, they are different. Some minority acts that cater more to the white crowd, and some minority acts cater more to the non-white crowd.
Yeah, to their own crowd. And I think that's why I'm happy to do these things, because I want to show audiences that, hey, there are different kinds of comedy, but don't be afraid to explore. Just because you see this, not even just the race, but the way I dress, you're like, ooh, is this for us? And I want to show, like, if the act is good, it'll work for everybody. And it should work for everybody. I'm not going to kill every single joke. Not everything's going to land with you, but it's going to be a good time and you've got to try and look at different forms of art that you've never seen before.
But truth to be told though, because you've come to UK before, you've gigged probably in London, you've done Edinburgh Fringe Festival. Some of these towns are small.
Oh yeah. Like, I mean, Louth, Lincolnshire is an example of a small town.
When you actually get there, you would have expected some difference from the gigs you usually do. But when reality hit you, how different were they? Like, were you shocked?
No, because, I mean, I've toured all my life. I've been all over the place. So for me, it's just, okay, new town, new audience, let's figure it out. So I will sit down and I'll watch the shows. I'll watch the opening acts, if I'm not the opening act myself, and figure out, like, okay, what's the vibe? Do they want clean, dirty? Are they more conservative? Are they more liberal? And it's just, you know, being a proper comedian. And
let's talk about your preparation step by step.
Yeah.
You know the next town you're heading is this. So what's on your to-do list?
The to-do list is just have a quick cursory Google of like town name fun facts or things you didn't know about.
Do you ask Ed and the other driver? Who's the guy?
So the driver is normally the tour manager. The thing is, I just do it myself because if I ask Ed, sometimes it's like, this is someone who would give me the insider information, which is nice, but I rather like research it myself because I think it's more fun to show this is what I could find about y'all.
Yeah.
And then they can go, that's true. Or wait a minute, we didn't know that. Or that's an outright lie, which is also fun when I ask the town because I do after that, what I don't show in the clips is I ask the crowd, is there anything else about the town? 9 out of 10 times, they just don't say anything.
Explain this thinking. So you prefer to do research and find out by yourself. Is it to build a firewall, this idea is all mine? Or you think that that part of exercise will be more beneficial to your comedy muscle over the long term?
Honestly, it was just mostly because I wanted to see what I could find. And I think that's a better reporting because I don't want to get insider stuff. I want to be able to look at it as an outsider.
Yeah.
So I want to write this as an outsider. And as an outsider, the only way to know is to Google it, as anyone would. And this is things that they're not going to Google. We are not going to Google top places to go in Singapore or Taiwan because we're from there. Like, we don't have to. They're not as well. So I want to show them what people would find if they went to those towns.
Mm-hmm.
As an outsider, like, I want to be a reporter in that sense to show, here's what your lovely place.
Do you put a numeric... Do you say that I must do at least 3 or 5 jobs before the show and choose from them?
No, I just find the facts that I find it interesting. I will try to write jokes and I just choose the ones where I'm like, these are good enough. Because sometimes the local joke section is like less than a minute. It's like maybe 1 or 2 jokes because some towns don't have as much interesting facts.
Some towns just have to.
Yeah, so you know, there's like, I need to check my notes. There was one town that had nothing. They had done nothing in the show. I'll check out because it's on the phone. So
okay, it's not like you're too afraid to mention.
No, it's just more, I forgot. That's how boring the town was. I forgot the name.
But the towns you went to some posh places like...
Oh, yeah, Tunbridgewell, Cheltenham.
That's my other question. Did people tell you it's pronounced Cheltenham, not Cheltenham?
No, no one told me.
No one told you?
No one told me.
I almost thought you say Cheltenham on purpose.
Oh, no.
As a way to...
Yeah, no, I just said Cheltenham. Because I thought that's the pronunciation of it. But no one corrected me.
No one.
I think they were just too polite. I think that's like...
They are. Because normally English people, the people I know, a lot of that are very happy to correct. But it's just a different pronunciation. Americans will pronounce the same way too. Mm-hmm. So some Joe American, I see them in London, and they will pronounce the name specific in the American way.
Or it'll be like, oh, it's so nice to be playing in Greenwich.
Leicester?
Leicester?
Yeah, Leicester Square.
Yeah, I know. Like, that's really how they pronounce Leicester.
They would say Leicester and Tottenham, for example. They would pronounce the Tottenham. So, Cheltenham, Bath, Tunbridge Wells, these are posh places you've been.
They were very
But they're also a bit more rundown places.
Oh, yeah. I've been to my share of like, oh, this was not a... It's not in like a, I'm judging. It's more of like, not to get political. It's just 14 years of austerity does f*** up a town sometimes. There's some places that like the people were lovely, but it's clear there just wasn't infrastructure. Like the city councils didn't have the money or squandered the money. And it's such a shame because...
But is it true? I'm just guessing. I'm trying to map out the audience. It is somewhere from Generation X to Boomers and mostly couples.
The audiences?
Yes.
Oh, I mean, no, for Ed Burns' tour, this is Boomer. You're lucky to find Boomers sometimes. I get Greatest Generation. I get World War One coming in.
I feel like you're talking about the Night King from the White Walkers.
Yeah, it's like, you walk in, and the joke I do sometimes is like, some of you are old enough to have owned my country at one
point. So once you saw them... Mm-hmm. And from the first tour support gig to the later one, did you realize what you have been changing to accommodate this demographic?
No, I just do my stuff.
You just do your stuff.
And it works. And it's very fascinating because I don't like shy away from the gay stuff or talking about my partner and the fact that they're non-binary.
You are really brave. You're talking about going to sauna in front of straight audiences.
I mean, I'm not talking about saunas. That's the thing. I never like that way you go like, I have great sex. I do some things about sex, but I'm very like careful about bringing it up in a polite manner because not everyone wants to hear about fucking. So I bring it up in a cutesy way and in like a way that's approachable. And everyone's like, oh, you're brave. I'm like, they're going to laugh. They laughed at sex jokes when they were younger. Mm. They just need, but they're older. So it's like you'd have to approach it in an intelligent manner.
So do you have an example for this demographic of Ed Burns' tour's audience? A joke normally would do okay, but just fall flat for this demographic.
You'd be surprised, no. Most of the jokes that would work at the Ed Burns show would work well in my club show to work anywhere.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not trying to brag that I'm such a good writer. It's just I write generally. I try to make sure that everyone can have a good time. I want to make sure if
Years of training, you have already established a habit of writing to have the broadest reach.
I think it's years of abuse of a Singapore audience and... of them being, I say this with a lot of my Singaporean audiences, the dumbest f**kwits you've ever met. They don't know anything about anything. So every joke, the writing has to be good. You have to explain everything in your setup. You have to give them all the contextual clues at the start and not make it look like you're explaining a joke. You have to explain a fucking
joke. I've asked you back to talk about touring the UK, but this Singaporean bashing is going to go on.
Dumb as
the problem.
Shit. Stupid ass. Jumped up. Arrogant, racist, pieces of shit. Please get tickets to my show when I'm back in town next. But, you know, stupid. Y'all are stupid.
Anyone who wants to trade themselves...
I love you, Singapore.
...into a family-friendly, bland, raw... Yeah. Just have to go gig in Singapore days after days and night after night. And you'll acquire that
skill. Yeah, you will learn the skill. I had audiences who straight up did not know Rishi Sunak was the prime minister at the time. Didn't know that Myanmar was in a civil war. Didn't know that.
You mean Singaporeans?
Yeah, this was in Singapore. We are nearby. Yeah. They didn't know that there was like the junta takeover for Thailand at the time. Yeah. Not a clue. Thick as shit. Because I say in the show, but it's true. We are such a good country.
This is how
you read the news.
But that's how the Poundland democracy in Singapore works. Because people didn't care.
Yeah. For legal reasons, we are totally a democracy. I still need to go back, my love.
The power of irony. So,
don't get me banned as single.
I won't
call them stupid. I just can't talk about them.
Okay, so this won't be the promotion. No, I want to reiterate
again. You can put the stupid in the promo.
Why Sam is such a professional and hardworking comic? There was a clip you did at Top Secret.
Yeah.
You were trying to introduce or describe your home country, Singapore, but you're using all the knowledge people have of their own country.
Yeah.
So you say Singapore is a socialist democracy Yeah. That's Jeremy Corbyn's wet dream. Yeah. What did you say about Rishi Sunak?
We are tax haven for the rich, so it's a Rishi Sunak dream.
And you ended that there is a four-floor brothel called...
Four Floors of Whore.
Four Floors of Whore, and that's Boris Johnson's wet dream.
Yeah.
I think that joke is wonderful. Yeah, wonderful in that... You didn't lose yourself. Mm-hmm. You are from this specific country, but you managed to introduce yourself in the way that locals get, oh, you are speaking our references. Mm-hmm. That implies that you look into what we are as a country. You did your homework. At the same time, that metaphor was just, it was perfect.
But it also explains the country. So now anytime I do any jokes about Singapore, they already have the image in their head. Yeah. I don't need to give them all the facts, but I need to paint the picture of this is what it is, this is what it looks like.
Yeah, yeah.
Because this is years of traveling, of like years of being on the road all over
but there
the world.
Can be people that travel all the time, but they don't have the same command of the comedic language.
Yeah, because it's shit.
All right, let's move to...
Terrible.
When I was looking at one of your recent posts, it was funny because you're doing a show in Luxembourg, and after that, Norwich. It's quite a turn.
I book judiciously as badly as possible, so I can just have the worst travel. No, like Luxembourg was fun. Norwich was fun as well.
Yeah. So in 2022, you did a continental European tour.
Mm-hmm.
How many countries did you go? Do you remember?
I think it was 6 to 8 countries, multiple shows in the countries as well.
Yeah. And this time?
This time, I've not done any. Luxembourg was the only one.
Was the only one?
Because this is my first year in the UK, so I kind of want to focus my attention on the UK for now.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was talking to Sid Singh about this, where he said when he got to the UK, he started to just tour around Europe and forgot to focus on the home base because he's based here at the time. And that's what I want to do. I want to focus on here. And this is my first year, so this is the allow me to introduce myself year. This is the year where I'm going to go and do some of the gigs I don't want to do, but just as a way of just saying hi.
Let's and not record it. Send the evidence there. No. I'm going to do the gigs I don't want to do.
No, straight up. There's some gigs that I currently have done, and I'm like, I did not want to do these gigs.
You know, some of those gigs and places you've been, I wouldn't mind going there, but I don't drive. And
And
transport is also very expensive. So... Because you had a tour manager was driving, right?
For Ed's one, yeah. But for myself, I had to take the train.
Would you happy to go do a gig if he comes at financial loss to you?
If it's like £10 loss, for this first few years, yeah. Because I know I need to slowly build connections with all over the UK. Because if I eventually want to tour the UK and if I want to be a bigger name, I need to go to these places. I need to meet.
So on those European dates you did in 2020, do you still remember much about those gigs?
Yeah, I keep a travel journal. So even if I don't remember too much, I can actually go back
to
the
journal. So why did you want to do it at that time, do you remember?
Because I wanted to just play in more cities and learn more and find more.
But now, given the chance...
Yeah, I would love to go back and do it. But for now, I need to focus on the UK and UK touring to just because this is the new home base and I need to research more and introduce myself to more people. I would love to do another European tour, but it's just on the bricks for now. Maybe 2025.
Okay, so you're taking the new show to Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any tour in mind?
Yes, my agency and I are currently planning a sort of a small UK tour. Small towns and clubs, like 50 seaters, because I'm not a big name.
And how many cities are you thinking?
They have not told me yet.
They have not told you yet.
I would like at least 10 for this year. My goal is I want to always have played more countries than I have age-wise. So I'm currently a bit under, I think, like 27 countries right now. Europe is a great place for me to get more. So I want to start earning that. And then eventually, South America.
Yeah.
And Africa as well.
The way you're looking at this from that angle, you're such a board game nerd. And yeah. You're collecting
I'm a geek and I love it. In terms of the type of gamer I am achievement hunter kind of gamer. So I like to find and collect these things.
I'm kind of glad I almost wanted to do a separate episode when I have a guest host and just ask me about the touring. And now that we've spoken about it, I don't have a lot of thoughts. It's not very interesting. It's a lot of them is about logistic and trying to get used to a different venue. I'm pretty sure the second time would be different. But come to think of it, it's all a bit of blur right now. I don't know what more to say.
It's a lot. Like, I love stand-up. I love performing it. And I know a lot of people love it. But for me, I really love it. And I really treasure the time, but also the craft of it. Come to my shows.
Before we go, where can people find you in Edinburgh Fringe Festival this year?
They can find me at the Counting House. I will be stationed there for my solo show, Sam C. And I Can't Feel at Home in This World Anymore, about why I left Singapore and moved to the UK.
And what's the time slot?
And it's at 5:45.
5:45.
Yeah. I also have the Asian Comedy Showcase, which is back at 2:15 at the Pear Tree, which is the same building.
You know, my show is 3:15. It's in the same venue.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
no, you can come on.
No, you can come on.
Oh, which one? 3:15 at the...
Counting Out.
Because I also have to host the Pick of the Fringe at the Three Sisters after my own show. So
whatever.
I'm running. I'm busy. I'm a busy
boy. Remind us how to find you on social media.
You can find me on social media at Mr. Sam C. That's MrSamSee on all socials, except OnlyFans. I use a different name there.
Okay. And this is our first returning guest and could be the last, we don't know.
let's see how the numbers are. He will decide based on numbers. So if you want more returning guests,
yes, because I do apply the rigorous analytical skill of big data into. Yeah. So yes, we'll see whether it be more returning guests based on how well this episode is doing. Mm-hmm. I'm going to thank you for coming on podcast. That's our being our guest today, Sam C. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.